I'm like, can you just walk into this store behind me and like kind of look over my shoulder and be like, did you say 50 calories?
Cheers. Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 293, and today's guest is Bill Shufeldt, co-founder and CEO of Athletic Brewing, the award-winning non-alcoholic craft brewery, which is now one of the biggest craft breweries in the United States. Craft brewery, it would help if I could pronounce it correctly. One of the biggest craft breweries in the United States. In this episode, we talk how exactly one goes into a historically alcoholic category with an awesome non-alcoholic craft beer brand, what went into the branding, the beer, finding investors, and of course, the flagship Run Wild IPA. It is Run Wild Bill. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Bill Shufeldt, co-founder and CEO of Athletic Brewing, who, if you haven't heard of them yet, just go to your nearest bar because they probably have distribution there. They're blowing up. Their distribution's increasing like crazy, but just absolutely game changer, pioneer, especially in the U.S. in terms of non-alcoholic beer. Bill, true honor to speak with you and, of course, reminisce about the Connecticut days. How are you doing today?
Great, thank you. The honor is all mine. Excited to have some fun today. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And so we're going to get into all the stops and tastes and beer samples along your journey. But before that, what does the term Stam Vegas mean to you?
I'm not sure. Definitely in reference. Yeah, it's Stamford is about as busy as Connecticut gets in terms of like bars and nightlife. So I think people use it to refer to like the hot spot of Connecticut. In general, like Connecticut is totally underrated in terms of greenery, cuisine, access to beaches. Like the whole coast of Connecticut is gorgeous and no one ever talks about it. And then you don't have to go more than like 5 miles inland and you have like valleys and mountains and like everything. So, but I'm kind of fine with no one talking about it because there's some nice space to move around.
Yeah, exactly. So we actually have that in common. So I know you spent some time. Well, so did you actually live in Stamford or did you just work there when you were at your previous life?
I worked in Stamford. I've lived in towns kind of all around that area in my life. Yep.
Okay, cool. So my first job out of college, I was initially working in Wilton, Connecticut, and then I lived for 3.5 years in Stamford. And shout out the Big D, my old roommate, Danny, who always, he would never say the term Stamford. He would just say Stam Vegas. And we always thought like he made it up, nobody else said it. And then one day walking down that main street there, the main strip of restaurants in Stamford or Stam Vegas, there's like a Verizon billboard that said Stam Vegas. And we're like, wait a second. So I'm not sure how widespread it is, but from your time working there, I know that was in the hedge fund part of your life, which is pretty much the same thing as non-alcoholic beer. But can you give us kind of like just a quick day in the life of that? Like, was this the stereotypical, like working crazy hours, like kind of just a lot of adrenaline, you know, tons of trades every day? Like, what was that like for you?
I grew up in a town that was like basically all finance people. And then I went to college with the eye of going into finance and I went into finance and I was just on that path. A day in the life for me was wake up at 5:30 a.m. If I was working out, I woke up at 4:30. I was at the desk usually between 6 and 6:30. And you really had to be very ready to go to start trading on news at like 7 a.m., if not earlier. And then really, the day very rarely wound down before 6 p.m. And it was probably 1,000 emails that you had to sift through, a lot of market data sources. I had 12 monitors, made hundreds of trades a day. I was in a room with the most intellectually challenging people I've ever met. So every word out of your mouth did get dissected and challenged. And I thought it was an incredible place to you know, like sharpen the sword and like build my toolkit for the rest of my career. And I'm really glad for how challenging that was, but it was grueling too. It was a like 10 to 12 hour workday plus 3 to 4 nights a week, work dinners with colleagues, idea dinners, research analysts, conferences. It's not like my life slowed down on the weekends in my 20s either. It's like you like hope to hit a week and like recover from what life is like on the weekends in your 20s. And it was burning the candle weeks around, years around for a decade plus there for sure.
I know you worked with Steve Cohen's company, who's since known for a lot of things, and like, so we're not going to dive all the way into that, but I'm just curious, was there any insight back then? Did anybody know that he was actually going to buy the Mets at some point, or did that come out of nowhere?
Well, very clearly a huge sports fan, and he has a lot of interests. But at the end of the day, I learned a ton and have taken a lot onward from Steve. It was a very like merit-based organization. If you showed up and did well, it was extremely fair to that. And like, there was just no tolerance for like platitudes and fluff and non-productive people. And I think that that's a great takeaway from how he built this business, as well as the respect I have for him showing up every single day. Every single day he was in that seat learning, and his game changed every single year. And like, he's very open to changing his mind, incredible risk manager. Consistency is something I learned from him, is he's in that seat every single year, every single day, every single year, plugged in, paying attention on it. He knew as much about the stocks in anyone's portfolio as they did. He's not in the position he's in by accident. And I definitely a demanding person, but at the end of the day, ultimately fair. And I took a lot away from working with him.
Well, I know your brand has a lot of fun visual words and wild words tied to it, but I did not have the word platitudes on my Bill Schufelt bingo card. So check in all the boxes right away.
I'm a big fan of efficiency, for sure.
So let's get to Athletic and Athletic Brewing, however you want to say it. Super cool company that I swear, you know, so we live in Hoboken and there's multiple bars here that I think might have multiple of your offerings there. Maybe on draft it can as well. I'm not sure the split, but super cool, super cool. Obviously doing well from a distribution standpoint. We'll talk investing as well, but I want to go back to the early days of that. So at some point you went from hedge fund to I need beer that has none to very little alcohol in it. Like what even opened your eyes to like, there's kind of a market opportunity here for non-alcoholic beer?
It was very personal. So I was living that life I described. I was burning the candle at both ends, and it was very intense. And then as I was turning 30, I was about to get married. I was taking my career very seriously. I was taking my personal relationships, my health very seriously. And I was kind of evaluating, like, you know, big round numbers and age and big life events like getting married are like good times to evaluate what's going on in your life. And I was thinking about what's important to me. It's family, career performance, my health, my workouts, my sleep, my diet, relationships with friends. And like, I looked at all these things and it had been building, but I was like, alcohol is a problem in all these key areas of my life. And it's not like I had that, like a single painful event that really like came to a head or anything. It's just that like, it was a ceiling on basically every important part of my life, as much as I loved socializing and everything. And I thought that if you stop drinking, socializing goes away. Also, it was like a big conflict there. So I stopped drinking for a month. I was actually training for my first ultra marathon at the time. So it was like a very easy time to be making this change. And I felt amazing. I was performing great at work. I was getting the best sleep I've ever gotten in my life. And like this intellectual curiosity turned back on that I think had been just shut off for 14 years. And it was like this virtuous cycle. And so I decided I wasn't going to drink anymore. But I was still going to all these work events, all these social things, weddings, bachelor parties, barbecues, sporting events, whatever. And I realized I still loved being in all those places and I didn't care at all about alcohol. And I was like, wow, I'm actually having more fun, enjoying my friends, conversation, everything more. And I wake up the next day at 7 a.m. feeling amazing on weekends. And all of a sudden my weekends were like 2 to 4 hours longer because I was feeling great every morning. And so it was an easy decision for me not to look back. But the biggest pain point there was there were literally no options. Like, moderation was near impossible 10 years ago, and maybe by construct in the industries. So, like, I had never intended to be an entrepreneur. If you asked me even 2 years into business planning, I would have told you there's a 10% chance I ever leave Point 72. It's a great firm. That's where everyone wants to be in finance. I thought I'd be there the next 20 years and retire. But all of a sudden, the chance to have this big impact came to light for me. So I saw the impact on myself. I saw the total lack of options. And I was in this job that was like very selfish in a way. I was going to provide really well for my family, but I was never going to have a positive impact on anyone else. And all of a sudden, I saw this chance that I could positively impact tens of millions of lives, like help people get access to moderate options, have the option to drink or not drink. You know, there's 15 million documented alcoholics in the country, probably 30 million alcoholics total. People just didn't have options to moderate. But also, if you have moderate options, all these non-drinkers, which is basically 50% of the population, can come and socialize without like any judgments or anything like that, where historically this had been so stigmatized to make that choice. And all of a sudden, the impact of the idea just like snowballed on me. And like this fire got lit that I didn't sleep for like 2 nights in a row. And it was really my wife that helped me like see this in the idea. Together, we talked about what a 3-year budget looks like. And I was out the door on my job 2 days later. It was like January 2nd, 2017.
Oh my God. I think that's something that's so common as an entrepreneur, than not being able to sleep, maybe, you know, throughout like a whole week or half a week, like you mentioned. And I feel like it's either when there's something you're super excited about or there's something you're super worried about, and sometimes both. But in this case, like clearly there's like your body's kind of telling you, or your brain's telling you signals of like, hey, I should start spending some time like getting serious about this. So I have chills hearing about that. That's awesome. Also, that should be your new slogan, the little nugget, how you said you could add 2 more hours to your weekend. That's an incredible product benefit because I never thought about that.
Like I went to, all of a sudden I was waking up and working out, and I was like back at the house before like everyone's weekend was even getting going. And it was this like amazing hack. And some of my favorite hours of the day, all of a sudden were between like 6 and 9 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. And those typically were not great hours historically.
The best.
Yeah. Just going back to like, when did I know it was a great idea also? So like a couple months into working on it full time, the fire was burning so strong that like, I love sports, absolutely love it. And like NFL playoffs, college football, like it doesn't get better than that in sports to me. And all of a sudden I was like, sneaking away from NFL playoff games and going to work on like an Excel model for Athletic Brewing, or like reading a book about beer that I was reading. And like the passion was just totally taking over. And that's something I always, whenever I talk to someone who's like thinking about founding a company or making a big switch, I'm like, can you imagine being able to turn this off or getting sick of this idea? Because like the fire has to burn so bright because the road is so tough.
Can you imagine missing NFL red zone? That's the real test right there. So you decided that like clearly you had this passion for this space. There's an awesome white space opportunity there. But I mean, you've been working in a hedge fund for many years before that. Like, how did you start to educate yourself on actually making beer that's, well, just making beer in general, but also making beer that's non-alcoholic and tastes good?
Well, I think so. Both of those things you just said were kind of like first principles things to me. Everyone in the beer world had glanced over both the market size and the way to make non-alcoholic beer because it's always been that way. You know, it wasn't a new market. It was just the only market in the grocery store that hadn't changed in 25 years. Where like, if you went into Whole Foods in 2015, it was it still is an amazing store. But every category is totally different than what it was 30 years ago. Non-alcoholic beer was like the exact same shelf as it had been for decades. And like the category had been a rounding error to zero. It was assumed that like 0.1% of the population was interested in that product. And I looked at that and I was like, I'm a very average, just want to be slightly healthier modern adult. Busy, plan to be a parent, want to be a little healthier. This fits my life. And I was like, I bet this makes sense to like 100 million people. And it's just like, it's a product and it's a quality problem. So I like took it back to first principles on the size of the market. And I was like, the size of this market is totally wrong. And I think I'm literally like the only person in the country that thinks non-alcoholic beer is going to be like 50% of beer in the future. So that being said, everyone in the industry I talked to was like, honestly, save your money. Like non-alcoholic beer is never going anywhere. No one asked for it. No one's talking about it. It's not going to be a thing. So that was a big first principles moment, is I knew I was like very differentiated with a strong opinion on the size of the market. Also taking out the assumption of like how non-alcoholic beer is made was a huge one. And when I met our co-founder, John, that was kind of one of the things I talked about first, is like we have an enormous scientific and innovation challenge ahead of us, but like this tough work will be very worth it. And we did work in an empty warehouse together on Gatorade Junks for like 9 months to reinvent the way non-alcoholic beer is made. And then we scaled that up. But there is so much non-alcoholic beer that is like the exact same thing as it used to be, but like just talked about in an exciting way these days. Like we had to totally reinvent the quality and reinvent the marketing to like really get people excited about it.
How do you do that? How do you like reinventing marketing, or even bigger than that, a category, is like one of the hairiest meatballs I've ever heard. Like, how do you do that?
It totally depends how you go about it. Like, there's like focus groups where it's like, okay, I think these people may want this, and I've asked 100 people, and the average of those thoughts gets me to this place. My approach was always like, I am the perfect customer for this, and this is like what my gut instinct is telling me. And just like very natural, authentic parts of my life spilled out into the whole brand. It's like, I love the outdoors. I love premium ingredients and food. I love great tasting beer. I want the brand to be charitable from day one, have B Corp ethos, 100% stock ownership, and just everything about the brand. I wanted it to be a brand that as people, like even 3 to 5 years into their athletic journey, were finding out totally new things about the brand that they love, even like peeling back the onion more and more every year. So, but yeah, I think being authentic is very important. There's so many brands. There's over 100 non-alcoholic craft beer brands these days. A lot of them have almost word for word cut and pasted Athletic's website, which is like, I'm like, that's my life, like that you're cutting and pasting. It's like, that is our team's heart and soul, that you're being like, hey, this is us. I'm like, this is us. But like every brand decision has been super easy because it's so authentic. And like we tell the same stories inside our walls as outside the walls. We're never trying to guess where our customer is because we talk to them directly.
That has a ring to it. Authentic, athletic. Say that 12 times fast.
I love it. Very cool.
So you mentioned before that like everybody was telling you at the start, like, save your money. Like, this is not going to work. Like, who would drink non-alcoholic beer? Like, what was the thing that changed within the company or results, whatever, that like you started to see investors and distributors be like, we want this. We want this. Like, selling like hotcakes.
The road was like surprisingly way longer than it probably even appears. And it still is. Like, every sales call we do is not a slam dunk for sure. I won't say like which state or which retailer or anything, but like just 2 months ago, a retailer was like outright laughing in my face about like the future of non-alcoholic beer. And I was like, okay, like, sure. I was like, but you should probably still put it on your shelf in case you're wrong. From that first day, like, surprisingly, there were a number of people that got it very quickly. I would put at the top of that list was Whole Foods. I went into a local Whole Foods store where one of our investors was like, go look for this person at this store. They're really nice. But credit to that local forager, just in a local Whole Foods in Brooklyn. She tried it. She was like, this is amazing. I bet the Whole Foods customer would love it. I'm going to make you an appointment at Regional in New Jersey next week. And I brought in brown bottles that we had filled in John's garage, had no branding on them. And Justin and Chris, the two guys, tasted it and they were like, oh, can I see like a little bit of the branding concepts? And they were like, our customers are going to love this. This is like a real IPA without the alcohol. It's like, you can't tell it doesn't have the alcohol. And Then I like shared the nutritionals. Oh, it's got like a 25% of the calories of an alcoholic IPA. Whole Food, like a big company like that, bought in right away and gave us distribution. So there were some of those, but those were very far and few between. It was a lot of rejection. It was a lot of no's. It was a lot of days of sales calls where I didn't land a single thing, or I was like doing tactics where I'd, you know, I'd find someone in the parking lot and I'd be like, you know, I'm having a really tough day of selling. I've got 20 no's. Could you help me get one yes? And I'm like, can you just walk into this store behind me and like kind of look over my shoulder and be like, did you say 50 calories? Or like, but like some of these interactions were like so memorable because I'd like end the day with like a win. I did 75 sampling events that first year. A lot of that was like standing at the booth talking to no one or getting made fun of. But I think that in person, I really learned a lot about what people thought about existing non-alcoholic beer. It helped me tell that story to connect with them in a very short space of time, just with like thousands of iterations on it. And like really knowing the brand from like as close to the street level as I could. And we really haven't lost sight of that at Athletic. Like we don't really outsource anything as a company. And like, we make sure we're in the market, talking to our customers, sampling all the time. And I think this year we've given out over 1 million cans already at events and stuff. So,
well, thank you for all you do. And for, I think, no matter like whether people have tried your beer or not, like you have millions and millions of fans out there just from the fact that like you are like giving out free beer for anybody. They're big fans of that. But no, it's so true about like the sampling events and, you know, festivals and things like that, of just like how much you learn from, you know, being on the ground and just talking to people. And clearly like from day one or day negative 500, like you are the brand flows through, like, you know, the life you're living in the the scenario that you were in. So it all comes through super true. I want to hit on one of your beers because it holds a special place in my heart. So Run Wild, your flagship IPA. It just so happens that it's kind of the catchphrase that we use at the end of every one of these podcast episodes is let your business run wild. And so I've always liked that term, run wild, and you don't see it too many places. And I think even before I knew what Athletic Brewing was, I saw it on the menu somewhere and was like, oh my God, there's a Run Wild IPA. And so like, that's what like actually, and obviously I'm in a very, you know, specific scenario for this to like apply to me like that. But that's actually how I found out about you guys first. It wasn't even the fact that you were non-alcoholic or anything like that. So that's just pretty cool. But
love it.
For that one specifically, like, and maybe it flows through to your other beers as well, like what goes into like the name and the packaging and kind of like crafting a story with each beer that you end up selling to customers or giving away for free?
I can't even tell you how much time went into our company name and the first few beers. Actually, Run Wild was like a very easy one. Like that one just landed. That was actually the backup name for the whole company.
Oh, wow.
I'm surprised the company's not named it, honestly. But coming up with the name Athletic Brewing, it was probably a full 2-year process. I had a few placeholder names, but really ran maybe 50 names by our legal team for trademark approval. And thank goodness, none of them were available. Yeah, it's so hard with 10,000 breweries, 10,000 wineries, any number of spirits companies, brew pubs, whatever. And all of them releasing so many products, like to get a combination of words that hasn't been used by any of them yet is very difficult. And I was very surprised that Athletic, I had initially loved Athletic, but dismissed it immediately because I thought no way it was available on a trademark basis. But naming and trademark is super important and not to be taken lightly, for sure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And on that, like I know that's, you know, it's your flagship one. It's one of your most beloved brews, but what do you have you and you know, your, what's the term, head brewer, master brewer,
yeah,
co-founder, right?
Yeah, John's our co-founder, and he's now COO. Yep.
Awesome. But so do you have just internally like a standard of like it needs to taste this good before we release it to the public?
Oh, absolutely. We have very well defined specifications for our beers. You know, e-commerce pilot beers, like we obviously want them to be high quality, like first time releases. We want to make sure it hits what we were targeting. The team likes them. We have big sensory panels that operate on both coasts, and we send beer back and forth. But for a beer like Run Wild or our flagships, every batch is tested 55 times before it goes out the door, and it has to meet a very specific set of criteria and specifications. Otherwise, it goes down the drain. And we are very shameless about putting beer down the drain and only want our best quality beer to go out the door.
Not that many people can say goes down the drain and like literally mean it, but it applies.
Yeah. It's much better if you catch it before it gets into cans. Once it's in the cans, right, it is a total pain to get out of the cans. Yeah.
Oh my God. And you've hinted at investors, and I would guess that part of like the growth in distribution and marketing and all of that, like a lot of that you can, well, not a lot of that, but some of that, at least the marketing budget side, you can credit to the amazing investors you have. You've done so many different rounds of that. Like, what advice do you have for anybody that's maybe trying to launch a product or trying to like disrupt a category when it comes to like pitching and actually securing investment rounds?
The environment's tough these days, for sure. You know, there's been definitely a boom bust in the fundraising world. I think some of the things that are really important to get right are like agreeing on like what are the goals here. Like, so many people focus on like just getting money in the door. And I totally realize there are critical moments where sometimes people just need to take any check to keep the lights on. But it's usually not that case. If things don't feel right, just hold out a bit longer for the right person, talk to a bunch of people. But like aligning on goals, like what is the goal of both parties? Because if you take it, like there's a lot of times where I talk to founders, I'm like, what's your goal? They say, I want to change the world and do this forever and build this category and be the leader. I'm like, you took investment from someone who has a 5-year time horizon and they really want to be out in 3. Like, how are you going to solve for that? And of course you can take more and more investment and they basically trade out. But it's really important to get those things right, because who's in your boardroom definitely is an enormous deal. You know, investors you're very often with for 5 to 10 years, and it's really important to get that right. And I feel really fortunate that we had 70 angel investors at Athletic. You know, we probably have upwards of 130 now, and I have a personal relationship with all those. There isn't a single one I would kick off the cap table if I had a chance to. They've been amazingly respectful, patient, helpful. Like, so I over communicate with them. I send out very regular investor updates, but I think that's important, because like, I don't want to say like, oh, venture capital is the right path, or family offices are the right path, or angels are the right path, because it is different for every business. Like, if you're building a fintech AI company, like it probably is right to get a VC who can help you hyperscale and absolutely nail that if that's your goal. But if you're trying to build a beverage business for 25 years, like not getting into VC too early is probably the right move also.
Well, speaking of growth and investment, pretty hot off the press at the time of this recording. Congrats. I know you guys just bought former Ballast Point Brewing production facility. And you can tell I don't know the lingo. in California, and you're kind of expanding your foothold from the East Coast and the West Coast from a production standpoint. Can you just hit on real quick, like, what your expansion strategy is from a production standpoint?
In many ways, even though we have like very specific quality production, it's like a very high touch manufacturing specification. It is really just like good old investment in like great jobs, great people, making our own products. And like, I think that's a skill set that has been somewhat lost in our modern economy. Like, in the last 25 years, things have been, like, the goal has been to be as lean as you can, outsource as much as you can, get everything as cheap as you can. We kind of made the conscious decision to turn that on its head and say, we want to really train high-quality teammates that are going to be with us forever and make excellent, top-notch products in our own buildings and make that work. It's not a decision for everyone, for sure. Like, the amount of headcount, management, resources that go into managing manufacturing is very high, as well as everything else. This will be our fourth brewery it's a great production facility with a lot of history, and we want to honor that tradition and all the work that's gone into it before. Yeah, we have another brewery right across the street that served us really well. We love doing business in Southern California and San Diego, and the Connecticut business environment is awesome too and totally underrated. The state of Connecticut has been very supportive and business friendly since day one. And so, yeah, we've built now 2 breweries in Connecticut, and we've bought one in San Diego, quadrupled the size of it. And we've just bought a second one in San Diego across the street.
Well, congrats on that. And with all this,
okay,
all the success story, I'm just curious, like, if you had to track it back to like one thing or like one approach that has driven the success of Athletic Brewing, how would you summarize that?
I was actually talking to this unrelated just with our co-founder John last night, who's just an amazing friend, and me and him have both grown so much with the business and enjoyed working together. Like, we're so complimentary, and we were just remarking on, like, what did we do to deserve all these amazing people walking in our door? Like, and you could talk about anyone in our company and like walk around anywhere in our buildings, and like, that person is so talented and such a genuinely good person. We often do remark on that, that it is like we've always, so from day, like way before day one, homebrewing around Gatorade jugs, we talked very seriously about like, what do we want the culture of Athletic to be doing? What are our goals? What do we want working here to be like? What's our impact we want to have? And that handbook, that it was like a 30-page handbook that I made in 2017 with John, has almost not changed at all in the last 7 years. Obviously, there's like ticky-tacky HR things that evolve, but like, I still walk through that with every teammate who starts at Athletic Brewing. And like, we emphasize how important culture is, like what we're doing. We have a very thorough interview process, and like, we work really hard to get the people right. And then also, like, make it not a job. Like, we're very clear about like the why of everything we do. And it's not just like, we need this report. It's like, can you help me on this report for this meeting? I'm trying to tell this story to this key account or something. And like, really trying to like let people know what part they play in the overall success of the company. And everyone in our company is a shareholder, really trying to foster that. But like, I'm very often like the front man of the company, and like, I had the original idea. And of course, at the end of the day, like, a lot of me and John's personality comes out in the brand for natural reasons, because we're like, we love what we do and we meddle in everything. But like, we just have such an amazing team behind us that is doing all this. And so.
What's also amazing is how much of a gem Bill is on video as well. And you can actually see the video interview for this interview, as well as other Wild Business Growth podcast videos, on YouTube. Just go to YouTube at Max Brandstetter. That's MaxBrandstetter. No idea why I spelled that out. My name is way too long. And make sure to hit subscribe while you're there to catch each video episode of the Wild Business Growth Podcast. That's what. That's YouTube at Max Brandstetter. Now, let's continue to amaze, or be amazed, or both. Well, speaking of amazing, let's wrap up with the most amazing question. No, I'm terribly corny, but I do want to wrap up with some rapid-fire Q&A. You ready for it?
Awesome. Yeah.
All right, let's get wild. Let's run wild, actually. Cheers. So back to Stan Vegas. Sorry, I can't resist. What was your favorite bar or restaurant in the Stanford area?
Bobby Valentine's is a classic.
But yeah, Bobby V's.
Colony Pizza.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. We had that recently in, we were in the Portchester one, actually. And I had the Stingers for the first time in forever. And oh my God, I forgot how hot those are.
Yeah. I lived in California for 2.5 years and came back in a colony. I was like, this is hotter than I remember.
Maybe it did. The Stingers have aged over time. Maybe that's what it is.
There's a Run Wild can on the wall in there now, signed by JJ Watt.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, J.J. Watt was like a very early Athletic investor who just like totally got what we were doing. He was in town probably 6 months ago, and we had pizza at Colony.
That's perfect. What a three-way collab there. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I know that you lived in Vermont and actually went to college in Vermont. My wife, Dana, her family is, you know, her grandparents used to live in Vermont for a long time, and so we used to make great trips up there. She's got tons of memories up there. I'm a huge, you know, traditional alcoholic beer fan as well. I know you're going to jump off now. No, but I know Vermont is an incredible state for craft beer. Before you started Athletic, did you have a favorite beer from Vermont?
For sure. I was in college in the early 2000s, and it was kind of a hotbed for the developing regional craft beer scene. Magic Hat was still private at that time, as was Long Trail. And I'd say those two were probably like right up there. Dogfish, even though it's from Delaware and like kind of has half Dogfish's heart in Maine, was like very present and available in Vermont. So Dogfish was always one of my favorites. I'd say Long Trail was probably, and then Otter Creek was a half mile down the street right in downtown Middleburg. And so I had a number of friends who had worked there over the years. And so we'd always have like a nice keg of Otter Creek on during the week. And then that would flip to like whatever the absolute cheapest beer in the store is on keg for the weekends.
Okay, well, this one will be much easier for you, I'm sure. What's your personal favorite athletic beer?
Run Wild, but I am like a monthly subscriber. And in my monthly box is two Run Wilds, one Free Wave, one Athletic Light. But like, I will admit the amount of Athletic Light I'm drinking is like really climbing up the ranks. It's just like a 25 calorie crusher. And there's like such a great place for good light beer also.
It is such good. The variety is awesome. And then last one, you've already mentioned a really cool brand collab. I know you've done some really cool ones. What would be your dream collab in the future that you haven't done yet? And why is it a game between the Athletics and the Brewers? So you can say Athletic Brews.
That's funny. There's so many different audiences and we get some like amazing ideas. I don't know. I don't want to give any of our competitors ideas either. So it's a tough question to answer. We do like three or four collaborations a year, but I feel like I've got like 20 good ideas in the hopper. So for example, without naming who they were, I worked out with two other founders this morning that I think incredibly highly of. And we came up with an amazing three brand collaboration idea that involves like a fun kind of geographic element too. So something like that is probably coming in the very near term. But like the nice thing is, so going back to like, we own all our manufacturing, which is a very rare thing in both non-alcoholic beer and food. Like most people can't just like spin up a product, but we have everything from 300, 700, 200, 300 barrel brew houses and can make, we have all sorts of flexibility. And very often we have like five iterations of different test beers going on in those pilot brew houses. And so we can make a lot of fun stuff and spin it up on our website really quickly. And so opens a lot of doors.
It does. Opens a lot of doors, opens a lot of mouths. Bill, thank you so much. This has just been incredible. I mean, it's what you and John and team with the brand have done with the brand. It's like I can't talk. It's just incredible. And
thank you.
It's clearly such an energizing company and space to be in overall. I mean, I've always thought the brewery space is fun in itself. And then you add in like, hey, there's a whole other white space opportunity here. And it's got to be that much more energizing. Clearly was to the point you couldn't sleep for a couple of days. So thank you so much for coming on. I know people can learn more and get your beers at athleticbrewing.com. Is there anything else you want to shout out? Like if they want to connect with you online or just anything else more about the company to connect with?
Yeah, I'm easy to find. Athletic is easy to find online. And yeah, our store finder, if you're looking for local beers on our website, you can sort by like either store or restaurant. Super easy to.
Perfect. And it might even be a restaurant that has a J.J. Watt signed Athletic beer can in it. And then last thing, final thoughts. It could just be kind of a quote, words to live by, motto. You could literally just say the word Run Wild if you want. Whatever you want, send us home here.
I'm a huge believer of consistency these days. Like, so much in this world is like instantaneous results and expectations. Like, I'm a huge believer in just like 65 miles an hour every day.
Bill, I give you a 65 out of 65. Aced it. Thank you so much, Bill, for coming on the show, sharing your amazing athletic brewing story. And thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one or Run Wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite podcast app and subscribe to the podcast on YouTube. YouTube is at Max Brandstetter. You can also find us on Good Pods, where there are good podcasts and podcast recommendations. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com and sign up for the Podcasting to the Max newsletter. That is where podcasting meets entrepreneurship and awful puns. So like you're just shaking your head already. And you can sign up at maxpodcasting.com/newsletter. Until next time, let your business run wild. IPA.
Bring on the bongos.